You're listening to the On Call Nightmares podcast, and every week I go out of my way to do my best to bring you conversations with technologists who have spent time on call. And this week, we're going to talk to Nathan Harvey. He's a friend of mine. He's a person I think that a lot of you may have heard of before. He spent a lot of time at Chef, and then after that, made his way over to Google. He's a person I think I can actually look at as kind of a mentor. He's really taught me a lot about what DevOps is. I will say that he's taught me a lot about developer relations and how to work in this weird, weird world where you move beyond just, you know, break fix incidents and you start looking at the bigger picture. He's one of those people that really helped me kind of find my way. So I really want to welcome Nathan to this podcast with giant open arms, because I don't know if this would have really been a thing that ever happened. Like, I don't know if I would have ever ended up doing On Call Nightmares if I hadn't met and spent time with Nathan Harvey. So I know I talked him up a lot, but that's a friendship I'm really proud to have made over the years. So I'm really looking forward to you all hearing this conversation, because it truly is just two friends really talking about what they've done for a while and what they did in the past. So enough chitter chatter. Let's talk about how you can be part of this podcast. And it's real, real simple. Send an email to oncallnightmares@gmail.com, or send a direct message on Twitter to @oncallnightmare, or you can reach out to me personally. It's @jdestro on Twitter. I'm happy to hear from any of you. I'd like to tell your story, so please reach out. So anyhow, let's get into this conversation with Nathan. It happened over at Chef Conf in Seattle, and I'm really glad I got to talk with him, so I hope you enjoy it. You're listening to On Call Nightmares, and every week, that's right, every week, I go out of my way to do my best to get you a conversation with a technologist that spent time on call. And today, I feel very lucky that I've actually introduced a friend of mine to this podcast to come and speak with me. I came over to him and I begged him, would you do my podcast? And of course, he said yes. So I'm here with Nathan Harvey of Google. We are here at Chef Conf, and I feel like you're just kind of part of the furniture here at Chef Conf.
It definitely kind of feels like that. First, Jay, thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
And, like you said, you went out of your way. So we both went pretty far out of our way. We got to, like, fly across the country to meet each other in person.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Nathan and I, we live, like, in the same region of the United States. Like, I'm in New York City. He's in the Maryland area. So we've got that, like, we could take a train if we wanted to see each other, but we're both, you know, on the road and doing what we do for our respective employers. But, you know, we're both here at Chef Conf, and I feel like I'm on your territory is what it really feels like, because you walk around here, and one of the more cool parts of seeing this is seeing people that you've known for years that have been part of this conference that just assume you're just going to be here.
Right.
And it was just cool. Like, as soon as we walked in one of the rooms, I just saw people running up to you, and you're wearing a Free Hugs shirt that's red. So it's hard to miss you.
It's true. The shirt does say Free Hugs, although most people that know me, and certainly the people that know me here at Chef Conf, don't need the shirt for permission to get a hug. They know that that's kind of – it's one of the things that's that holds true, I think, in the wider ops community. You know, you have the whole sort of hug ops movement, but certainly within the chef community, we've embraced – sorry, that was a bad pun. But we really kind of hold true to that. And look, when it comes down to it, it's all about – and I think it's super important as you have this podcast. It's all about how do we help and support one another and recognize the work – that each other does, as well as recognize that each one of us is a whole human, right?
Yes.
It's not just about the work that we do. There are things that sometimes go well at work, that deserves a hug. There are sometimes things that go bad at work, that deserves a hug. Things that go great or terribly in your personal life, again, a hug. A hug, when it's consensual and appropriate, there are a lot of reasons why a hug works really well.
Yeah, there's something that I put on Twitter recently. I actually pinned it to my profile, and I have this kind of feeling, and I've been sharing it with people. It's the idea that ops is love.
Yeah.
We don't keep things going without ops. Like,
You love your SREs, you love your sysadmins, your operations, and your data center staff.
Sure.
This is one of the groups of people that I feel like throughout the cloud revolution we're forgetting about, is that the data center staffs that exist for all these companies around all these major clouds or cloud-based products that still, you know, need to be in a physical data center to host, like your DigitalOceans. You know, there are companies that are still doing things, you know, on bare metal. And I think that it's worth it for us to recognize that we have to help them over.
Right.
And so it's been cool to kind of collect their stories along the way, especially with on-call, because I feel like the coolest part about doing this particular podcast is collecting stories, because I think that that's what people in our position really love to do.
Yeah.
We grab stories from people, and we figure out the best way to kind of share them with our communities.
Sure. And you talk there a lot about like helping them over, and I think that a lot of what we do is we help people adopt sort of newer or more modern practices and technologies, but that there is truth also that we have to respect the work that came before us and understand and really know what was that work that led us to a place where we are today, where automation is actually a thing that we can adopt at large scale across huge organizations.
And what's funny is that some of the first real automation that I've ever saw put together were done by data center engineers.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going through and getting called while I was on call to say, hey, you know, this particular Red Hat server isn't, you know, enterprise server isn't distributing the packages right. But the thing was funny was that the person that was speaking to me about it, he already knew how to do like most of the health check stuff.
Right.
Like he checked all the right repositories, he checked file systems. He knew exactly what he was doing. And he was like, well, I can write this Python script to do this. And I was just thinking to myself, like, why aren't you here in the office with me? But then I realized that there are people out there that being able to rack stack and get things online in efficient and you know, repeatable manners is something that we still need and should appreciate.
Absolutely.
So I said the words on call.
Yeah.
And that's what this podcast is all about. It's all about being on call. And so before you were, you know, doing community work, you were a technician or an engineer like a lot of us.
Sure.
So why don't you take us back a little and give us the history of what you did as an on-call person or being on call in technology.
For sure. So I've definitely spent a good bit of time on call, and I've spent the last 7 or 8 years sort of helping build and amplify communities, and frankly, as a developer advocate, as someone that's supporting communities, you are on call.
It's true. It's very true.
It's a little bit different, and sometimes the problems are much they're certainly different problems because, you know, there might be personal interaction things that require immediate attention.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what this show is about. We're not going to talk about that.
Sure.
Let's talk about some technology and being on call. I remember, so the question was, how did I get to a place where I was on call?
Sure.
Man, just like a lot of people, I kind of fell into it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, probably the first job where I was really on call, I was working at this small startup. I got hired as the director of customer support for a stealth startup.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing about a stealth startup, no customers. And I was in charge of customer support. It was great. It was the best 3 days of being in charge of customer support. Because look, no one calls up customer support to say thank you, right? They call up because
something's wrong,
right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why you get the call. So I said it was 3 days as head of customer support because after 3 days, the CEO came in and told me that they had just fired all of the technical staff, all of the engineers that built the prototype, and I was now the most technical person on the staff.
Oof.
Yeah. And so he saw the look of shock in my face, and he said, don't worry, we've hired a consultancy to finish the app. And he saw the relief on my face, which he then wanted to dispel immediately and said, but we're going live in 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to build us a production environment. Go.
So
I became a sysadmin that day. And that day I also became on call. Like I was on call for that application.
And you have to make up what procedures are
on
the fly.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't go to the run book and say, how do things work? This was building from scratch. And that was super awesome and exciting and exhilarating and scary. But man, learned so much.
Yeah, I've been in those positions where someone says to you, hey, guess what? This is you now.
Yes.
And you you look at those situations and you wonder, how the hell did I get into this predicament? But I found that those can be both empowering because you get put in a position where you're going to make a decision on the technologies that are going to be used. Now, no one likes to be that one person, or as I like to say, for those of us who have read The Phoenix Project, you don't want to ever be Brent.
Right.
Never be Brent.
Yeah.
But I think that in the way we used to do things, a lot of people spent had some Brent time.
Yeah.
I had some Brent time. I'm sure you had some Brent time.
Absolutely.
And you for those, like I said, who don't know The Phoenix Project, go check out the book. Brent is essentially a character in this fictional novel that all the production deployments have to go through. There's no work that gets done without going through Brent. And we've all been there, I think.
Yeah, sure. As we were launching that startup, similar thing. Like, there's a little bit of all of us that sort of embraces the idea of heroism, right? I was going to be the hero. There were engineers that were building the application, and what they needed to focus on was building the application. And my role was to be the hero that got the operational environment up and running. Unfortunately, you know, it's easy to say it now, but it was very difficult to see it at the time. But what I was doing was taking on too much work. What I was doing was truly putting myself into not only this hero role, but also the single point of failure role.
Sure.
And so right before we launched, I got really, really sick. And I didn't have anyone that I could reach out to for help because I hadn't been sharing anything that I was doing. And so I remember launching that company, essentially, sitting in my bed, sick as a dog, and just doing all of the things that it took. And we launched, and that was successful. But looking back on it, I had a team of people that would have happily helped out if we'd collaborated a little bit better and talked to one another, and I didn't feel like I had to take it all on myself.
Yeah, I feel like one of the things that a lot of us who get past that certain, I don't know, there's like this time threshold, I feel like a lot of us, after years of trying to be the hero and living with it, and I don't know if this goes to a lot of you younger people, and I don't want to just make an assumption, but I can speak for some of us who are maybe in the late 30s, early 40s world, maybe a little older. You know, there was a lot of, like, pressure for you to be the hero. There was all this idea of, like, the rock star this and the ninja that, and a lot of the big companies picked up on those kind of pieces of language. And so you always felt like you were under pressure to be this superhero. And I don't feel like that's necessary, because hero syndrome creates this idea that only one or two people can fix a problem. And if you're stuck in that position, it means that you haven't socialized the information properly internally.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember a couple of years ago seeing a talk from Jennifer Davis that was about going from hero to zero, which on the surface sounds like the wrong path. But the talk was really great and really inspiring, and it just reminds us that, you know, by being that hero, not only do we put ourselves as a single point of failure, but we're also taking away the opportunity for others to learn and for others to have the same experience that we do. So in the end, like, it's putting a huge personal tax on the person that is in that hero role, but it's also putting a tax on the rest of the organization who can't, like, they can't participate in those things.
Where are the documentation pieces that show you what to do when Brent, as we'll just call them, leaves town for a few days?
Absolutely.
Or when, you know, or when Mary wants to go on vacation and she's one that's in charge of a particular, you know, code base, you know, what do we do?
Yep.
You know, if these are the people that we've put in charge of these ideas, to leave them in a position of, well, we can't do much more without them, it just doesn't make sense. So fast forward, and you go past this, like, this Brent job,
sure,
if you will.
Sure.
You get them up and running, and then how do you move forward after there?
Yeah, so I spent a couple of years there. I went on to another place, and, you know, this is all about on-call nightmares. So, boy, you know,
well,
we've all had them.
Before we get into what the incident was, and I have to go over the rules.
Oh, right.
So I do the rules.
There's got to be rules.
Yeah, I go over the rules every episode, and those of you who are listening, you know them, I suppose. Rule one, do not incriminate yourself. You don't work there anymore, so I think you'll be all right, but still, you could have friends that are still there.
Absolutely.
So let's not, rule two, let's not incriminate others, because all what we do is blameless, and even in this conversation that we have, it's all retrospective, and so the third rule is help us learn from what happened. So I'm going to give you the mic. Go ahead and just tell me about a nasty incident and how you recovered from
it. Yeah, sure. So I'll set up the incident a little bit. We had a deployment that was going to go out.
Mm-hmm. And where was this? Or
what's that?
Can you say where this was?
No, I don't want to incriminate anyone.
Fair enough.
Can you give us the sector? Where it was doesn't matter. Like, this was a website. It was a retail website.
Perfect.
We were about to push out a new release, right? And, you know, we were at that point, we were probably pushing out new releases once every couple of weeks. So pretty standard change.
Mm-hmm.
As is often the case, like, there was this release that was happening at work, but there was also this personal thing that I had to do that afternoon,
mm-hmm.
right? It turned out it was go have lunch with a bunch of friends, which, like, it's a thing that people do. I don't know.
Sure.
Do you eat lunch, Jay?
Occasionally.
Occasionally, yeah.
I work from home, you know, so lunch is one of those things that I may fall into.
Yeah, you might fall into lunch, right? Sometimes with other people. It's good to eat lunch with other humans.
I try.
Right?
Thank you, Stack Overflow, for offering me lunch once in a while. I appreciate it.
There you go.
Short walk for me.
So I did what any good release engineer or deployment engineer or whatever title you want to call, give that person does. I hit the big green deploy button, and then I pissed off to lunch. And guess what happened?
I'm shaking my head after he said the lunch part because I know exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Let's guess. You got to lunch, and then the alert started.
Yeah. You know, I sat down, I ordered with my group of friends, and the alerts started going off. And, you know, I dutifully acknowledged the alerts and went back to my lunch. And then they kept coming. So, you know, I think we've all been in this place before where there's a thing that is super important to you on a personal level impacts the work that you're doing. And, like, it happens both ways. And this was a particular scenario. So I finished up lunch. I got back to the office, walked in. I knew it was a problem, right? And so I sat down. I was talking to my manager and my team. And we immediately just started troubleshooting. And it was clear to me, or it was clear to my manager, how bad, how terrible I felt,
mm-hmm.
and how worried I was, and how anxious I was, because, like, this was a severe outage that I caused, right?
Mm-hmm.
I hit the button, I walked out, and I'll never forget, one of the most important things that manager did for me at that time was they said to me, look, you've broken production. Now you're really part of the team. This isn't the last time you're going to break production. If it is, I'm going to fire you. But I'm not going to fire you because you broke production. You're going to get fired if you never do it again.
You know, it's funny. I get what your boss said to you about, like, you don't really belong in a place until you've broken production.
Yeah.
Or you don't really arrive, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And my first 2 weeks at DigitalOcean, someone asked me to delete a load balancer that was an extra.
Sure.
So it's like an HA proxy server.
Yep.
And it had the same chef node and client name as the production one.
Oh, why not?
And somebody double named it. I deleted it. Both got removed.
Mm-hmm.
And the failover didn't work for the HA. And DigitalOcean's, like, you know, inbound new droplet creation request page went gone. And I had only worked there maybe like a week or two, and I'm shitting bricks.
Yeah,
because in the end, you're still in that position where you go into fight or flight. Like,
totally.
You know, am I going to lose my job? Am I going to get in trouble? Is my rent going to get paid? Am I mm-hmm. going to be able to? How am I going to explain this to my significant other? All this type of stuff. Whereas, if you work with a lot of really great managers nowadays,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to get fired.
No,
they're going to just say, write an incident report.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do a postmortem.
Yeah.
And let's determine, was it you or was there a cascading issue that really was the cause and you mm-hmm. were just a piece of the puzzle? And I think that's where we start learning a lot more.
Yep. And, you know, not surprisingly, this was totally one of those cascading issues. Like,
mm-hmm.
the way that this error was presenting itself was that the database was under crazy load.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was clearly a database issue. That's all the alerts that were going off were database alerts. Everything about this said there's something wrong with the database.
Like, too many connections to the database or something.
Load was spiking. Like, everything was terrible. Everything
sucks.
About it was terrible. It turns out that what happened was we had a little monitor on this application,
mm-hmm.
and if the application wasn't performing or wasn't responding properly, this little monitor would restart the application. And as it was looking at the application, it was checking the health of the application, it was checking in a pretty brittle way.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually looking, it's funny now, but hopefully you aren't doing this at home, it was looking for some HTML comments on the homepage.
Oh, man.
And so, of course, you can see where this is going, right? One of the developers, rightfully so, said, what is this HTML comment doing here? Like, it's not really doing any harm. It's not really increasing the payload, but it's just noise. So I'm just going to delete that.
If you're
going
to do a content check, you can do a content check on something that's relevant.
Yes. So just deleted that, deleted that comment, and then when we deployed, this monitor was constantly restarting the application. The application would come up. It would wait a minute or two for the monitor to kick in. The monitor would check. Didn't find the thing it was looking for, so it would restart the application. And so once you start doing this across all of your application tier, you just have this cascading failure where we, again, like you said, too many connections on the database, mm-hmm. right? It didn't really, like, we didn't see it first as too many connections on the database. The first thing we saw was CPU spiking mm-hmm. on the database because it was trying to establish all these connections. And then eventually, so yes, it all just kind of cascaded.
Database gonna database,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's so interesting, but there's like that one pattern or anti-pattern that we know of that I've seen in the past that, and it's funny, it's like either there's too many connections going on and you can't figure out, or there are connections that are stuck.
Right.
Because the queries are too big, or the queries are not efficient enough and you don't have enough CPU and memory to process them mm-hmm. all. And so you end up, you know, dealing with a build-up or a queue. I mean, luckily, if you're using like a RabbitMQ or something like that, you're queuing your messages or something. If you're not, I mean, you could get really, really overloaded and your app won't be up.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that's what happened.
It totally was. And it was also like this brilliant moment where it just kind of reminded everyone on the team that we have to work together and communicate with one another.
Mm-hmm.
This front-end developer made an innocuous change, a thing that was so simple yet had huge implications because there wasn't enough communication, didn't know what this thing was for, so just removed it. And it's also, you know, it's funny, I hear people talking about like, oh, HTML or CSS, that's not real programming. But you know what? It can have real implications on your production environment. We removed one HTML comment and we took down the application.
Yeah, I think that we don't, as an industry, give enough credence to the work that people who actually ensure the front end of the stuff that you do looks good, operates well, and operates in a snappy, quick, you know, way that when you click on stuff or mm-hmm. use an application, it responds the way you expect.
Yeah. I might take it a little bit further, Jay. I think you're right. Maybe we don't give enough credence or credibility to the folks that are doing that front end work. I would say that within our industry, if you're not doing the same work that I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
I don't respect you as much.
It sucks.
I think it's terrible. And in fact, it's beyond just within our industry. So it's of course we care about the titles and the work that you do within our industry. But I also get very sad when I see folks within our industry that is, frankly, a very privileged industry, looking down on other humans for other work that they've chosen to do and not respecting that. And that really, really hurts.
So I feel really strong about labor, and I don't want to get too much into this because it's not really a working, it's more about the work we do, not the concept of work. But I believe that no matter what we do, work is work, and that we should respect the work that others do.
Absolutely.
Whether you are, you know, taking care of writing Scala for a server, you are the person that cleans up the area outside of the office where someone's writing Scala, it's all work.
Absolutely. Yep.
And so the things that I've learned in the last few years are interesting from being in those positions. But I want to know.
Yeah.
You learned a lot about communication.
Yeah.
But was there something that really changed in the organization afterwards where that, like, innocuous comment that got removed, that can't happen without someone knowing. Was there something like that changed after the fact?
Right. You know, it would be great to say, like, from that point we instituted strong code reviews.
Mm-hmm.
The truth of the matter is, we had code reviews. We knew the code that was changing going into that, right? And it slipped through. And so I think that the key learnings that came out of that were, number one, things are going to, for me, one of the key learnings was things are going to break. Things are going to break all the time.
Always.
and it doesn't matter what safeguards we put in place, things are still going to break. So then it became a question of, okay, well, so how do you respond when those things break?
Sure.
And my manager did a great job of modeling the right behavior. Did not come in angry and red-faced and jumping up and down and shouting about this outage. Came in very calm, cool, and collected, and helped work through the problem. And that's exactly what we did. We started working through the problem. Okay, database load is spiking. So what does that mean? What could be the potential causes? What are things that we threw out as ideas that couldn't, like, if that were true, other things would be happening, right? And so we really got into that sort of communal or group troubleshooting.
Mm-hmm.
There was another thing that happened. Someone came into the office where we were working, where we were collaborating together, and they had a question. And again, the manager was really good, said, hey, we are right in the thick of it. So I don't know what your question is, but it can probably wait because we're dealing with an incident right now.
So stay on the critical path,
yep.
If you will.
So absolutely. So we did that. And then afterwards, once it was resolved, we then took the time to figure out, well, what was the process that led to this outage? And let's make sure that we have all of the people in the room discussing that, and what can we learn from that, and how do we go from here?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to be able to have good managers to mm-hmm. lead you through these types of situations. And I feel like when I talk to people about their biggest on-call incidents, mm-hmm. you know, the conversations I don't tend to have on the microphone very much are where managers
yep.
didn't step in to help prevent a situation from ever occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend not to have those conversations because we don't want to badmouth our managers. But I think that many of people who have been a part of major outages can almost look at, well, you know, there was a breakdown in access control that a manager never really looked
right.
at, or, you know, there was a breakdown in communication. And I think that good managers will recognize these types of gaps
mm-hmm.
and help your team fill them in. And it's important for a person on call to have a manager that's going to help you fill in gaps at times.
Absolutely.
Whether it's around the technology specifically, or to, you know, in some certain situations, you know, there needs to be some sort of repercussion.
Mm-hmm.
But never exact a punishment in the middle of an incident.
Yeah, certainly not then.
So, like, if you need to do some sort of, like, well, we need to write about this and mm-hmm. it has to go in a company file because you didn't do this, this, or this, that happens in companies, and we know that, mm-hmm. especially once you get into bigger companies.
Right.
But don't ever exact that kind of thing in the middle of an incident. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing that I've seen managers, like, fly off the handle in the middle of a bad thing.
Yes.
And that caused more problems mm-hmm. than it did actually, like, the actual incident.
Absolutely. If you look at the team around you that are in this, like, troubleshooting moment, there's already a level of stress and anxiety. And just layering into that is only going to make the decision-making worse. And it's likely going to exacerbate the issue. And so it is super important that in the moment, what you do is you stay in the moment
mm-hmm.
and let's get this recovered. We're going to have a chance to learn from this later, and let's not waste that chance. But for right now, let's get the system recovered.
And for you, the person on the other side of this conversation who's listening mm-hmm. to us, if you have actually, like, created an incident that occurred and that you're dealing with it, you know, and someone on call got called and it's a nightmare, don't overwhelm yourself with guilt. I think that that does more harm than good as well, because you're going to create an emotional incident for yourself where you're not going to get past that, and there's no way that you'll be able to fully recover because you'll be so worried about the work you're doing,
right.
what you did wrong,
yep.
and then how you're going to deal with what you did wrong after the fact. Mm-hmm. I think that I've been in a position where I had to worry what I was going to do after the fact,
yep.
and it killed me.
Mm-hmm.
So we learned a little bit about, you know, things. You've worked as a manager before, and
yeah.
you've worked with people who've been on call, correct?
Yes, I have. Indeed.
So I like to ask people who have managed on-call resources,
mm-hmm.
what's a piece of advice you would give to, say, a manager right now who's got an on-call team underneath them?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of advice do you think you could give that manager?
Yeah, I think the first thing to do is to remember, you know, in the heat of the moment, you've got to keep things cool, right? Stay in the moment, remain calm and cool, collected, and go through a good troubleshooting process. Have you're asking questions all the time. Ask, you know, if it is this, what are signs that it couldn't possibly be this, right? And just be very inquisitive. Like, we're inspecting this incident and really trying to get the most or the best answers out of it. But then I think the biggest thing from a manager's perspective is really to think about, after that incident, after you've recovered, how do you learn the most from that incident?
Sure. You and know? Ensuring your people, you know, like, get a great kind of feeling after the fact. Like, yeah, this sucked.
Yep.
But you know what? Here's what we gained from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, failure creates some of the most introspection possible, especially in the technology organization.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when I talk with other managers, I remind them that, look, success and failure are just opposite sides of the same coin.
Sure.
And for every success that you're celebrating, you should also be celebrating your failures.
Because absolutely.
When you celebrate failure, what that means is you're embracing the opportunity to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much that you can learn from it, both from a technology perspective, of course, like, oh, this system that we've architected is brittle in this way, let's fix that. But more importantly, it's about the organizational structure. At this particular place, one of the things that we did that had the biggest impact on how we worked operationally was we started opening up our postmortems to more and more people. We had people that were not on the technology team participating in the postmortems. And frankly, I think they showed up for those not expecting to do anything, mm-hmm. except, I got this meeting that my manager said I had to come to for an hour. And they sometimes had the best insights because they weren't actually in the thick of it. They weren't actually on the incident.
Maybe they're in product, and
yes.
they're hearing from an engineer around what they saw was a problem and how we can improve the product around
yep.
failure. So when this is failing, we have some sort of backup system that we can go to at least provide some
absolutely.
Sort of information. Yeah, I get you.
Absolutely. As a good example of that, we had one postmortem where I'd been asking our developers to come along, and they were very resistant to it. You know, that's not my job.
Sure.
Which totally makes sense. I eventually convinced one of the engineering managers to come along to this postmortem, and we, the operators, figured out what the problem was, how we could prevent it in the future. And if you step back and look at our solution, it looked like a Rube Goldberg experiment. Mm. You know, like the boot comes up and it kicks the egg and the egg rolls down the thing and eventually you get breakfast. The engineer in the room stood back and said, yes, that will totally prevent this from happening again. Also, I could change two lines of code to work around this and prevent that from happening again. Which would you prefer we do? So I'm like, yeah, I'm glad you're here. I wish you'd spoken up sooner. Also, thank you, and mm-hmm. let's go change those two lines of code, right? And it was as easy as that, but without that person in the room, we don't learn that way.
Talk. Talk yep. to everyone.
Yes.
Cool. So, you know, we're going to start wrapping this up
yeah,
and
sure.
kind of bringing it to the end. And I want to talk a little bit about what you're up to nowadays.
Yeah.
What you're up to nowadays is very familiar to me because it's not that far off. So you're a developer advocate with Google.
Yes.
You work with an incredible team of people. And the one thing I like to say about people in advocacy, we all serve the same communities. We just work for different companies, but we're all teammates, I feel. And so a lot of what you do, I feel, is very, very close to what I'm doing, too.
Absolutely.
How's it been as a developer advocate? And because you've made the change. And the reason I say, like, you feel like your furniture here at ChefConf is you were a chef for about, what, six years?
6 years, yep.
Yeah, I
yep.
mean, that's a long time in tech.
Yeah.
And I feel like you've brought over this really positive energy into the world of advocacy mm-hmm. and evangelism and feedback and conversations around tech. So tell me what life is like lately for you.
Yeah, life at Google is great. I think, you know, the role of an advocate is to go out into the world and help people learn and help people understand maybe new or emerging practices and technologies that can help them be better at whatever it is they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always sort of held that idea of learning and changing the work that you do as near and dear to what I care about most. And so to whatever extent I can go out and help people do that, that's great. The other thing that's super awesome as an advocate is I have the privilege to go and meet with a bunch of people who are doing things in old ways, in new ways, in changing ways, with success, with failure, and I just get to see and experience a lot of different
so
organizations,
cool.
right? Big and small, new and old, all of that. And really, it's an honor to go and be able to observe the work that people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then to bring that back into Google and share that with other folks.
Yeah, I can feel kind of similar in the way I handle my business at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm lucky every day that I get to meet people like, you know, you listening on the podcast. Like, I'm only talking to you because, you know, I get the ability to have these conversations with people like yourself and all the other people I've talked to, so that the people in the podcast can hear it. Because I feel like all these stories of outages and incidents, they need to be collected, because there's not a lot of people collecting these stories. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are rooted in a time and technology that's long gone. I mean, right. A lot of the old break-fix admin work, mm-hmm. Is pretty much been replaced by automation. A lot of the old deployment methodologies replaced by automation by the same people that used to be the break-fix admins.
Right.
And so it's really cool to see how work has changed, but at the same time, how people, in a mm-hmm. way, are still people.
Yeah.
And they just want information. They want to learn from you. And so I love being an advocate, and I think from what I've learned from you, because you and I, just as a personal part of this, and I'm sorry if I'm getting a little personal, you've helped me a lot in my career in the last few years, and I'm really thankful for it, because I wouldn't be in advocacy if I hadn't listened to people like yourself and Bridget, and it's just been amazing. And I told this to Bridget recently, and she got really, like, you know, red-faced, but, like, you know, seeing people like her, you, Waldo Grunwald, at, like, one of my first DevOps days, mm-hmm. it really influenced me to want to make sure that I'm having conversations.
Yeah.
That being insular in this industry is only a detriment to you. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you, Jay, because I think, you know, I learn something every time we have a conversation, and it is truly about listening to one another and treating each other like actual human beings and respecting the work that each of us does. And I've learned a lot from you over the last few years as well.
So thank you. I appreciate it. So we're going to wrap things up. Thanks again, Nathan. I really appreciate it. I know you all just listened to two friends kind of just chat for a while, but I think you kind of got something from it. And I hope you learned something.
I hope so too. Yeah.
Anyway, thanks, Nathan.
All right. Thanks, Jake.
You can hear the handshake this time, everybody.
There it is.
That's because we're here together in person. I'm sorry it's not as good a microphone as I normally have, but I'm working on that.
There we go.
So we'll be right back to wrap up this episode. Thanks again, Nathan, and we'll be right back with On-Call Nightmares.
That was a ton of fun for me, and I hope you enjoyed it as well. Nathan's just a really good person that's gone out of his way over the years to just give as much as he can to everyone as possible. And for that, I really do appreciate what he's doing over at Google is great. I wish he was doing it with me where I work, but, you know, we can't always have everything we want. So that's it for this week of On-Call Nightmares. We'll catch you next week. Please keep listening, and remember, I need your stories, so reach out to us on all the different ways I've told you, whether it's using Twitter at On-Call Nightmare or at JDestro, or just send me an email, oncallnightmares@gmail.com. Your stories make this podcast happen, so I'm looking forward to getting more of them. Until next time, my name's Jake Gordon. I do what I can to get you, every week, conversations with technologists that have spent time on call. Thanks a lot for listening.